friends, welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics are related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. And every time I do the intro, it sounds weird without the opening music. It just, I don't know. Yeah. The music just adds so much energy to it. Yeah. All right, so my name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hi.
And Chris Casso.
Hello.
All right, how's everybody this evening?
It's I kind of feel like if we did a fourth podcast tonight, Cole would just be like, hi! Like, I feel like you're, like, increasingly getting more.
Am I?
Yeah,
was
but
that,
no.
Am I escalating?
Yeah,
I don't feel like I'm escalating. Do I look like I'm escalating? Am I flushed?
You're a bit flush.
I'm no longer allowed to say anything bad about you, Cole.
There's been an injunction.
I've hit my quota, you know. People are kind of getting tired with it.
Yeah. Two episodes back, you hit your quota.
Can we just do a fourth one so he can get back?
Yeah, we'll do it.
More boisterous?
We'll do a mini-sode. It'll be released on Wednesday. Tune in Wednesday where we just...
Are you going to talk to me, though, or are you talking at me, though?
Who knows what we'll talk about? It's unscripted. This whole thing is unscripted, but it'll be unplanned.
Okay.
All right, so getting to the planned portion of this evening. Explain to Ben. Explain to Ben is basically what this comic podcast is, or what it ended up being, because I really don't know much about comics.
So why the heck do we start a podcast?
Well, that's a discussion for a whole other episode.
No, I want to talk about it now.
All right. So Cole Hornaday and I actually covered this topic in a very brief Ask the Panel Jumper episode that you can find at thepaneljumper.com. But I want to explore it in more detail and depth if we can, because I hear these terms being thrown about all the time. And actually, in the last episode, Cole misspoke when he meant one, and he corrected himself and said the other one. So I want to know, actually, what is the technical difference between a comic book, a trade paperback, and a graphic novel? So let's start with a comic, Nicole.
So a comic, we usually say, is like a single, like a floppy, although it can be just generally comic.
But I've heard the term floppy before.
Floppy is what we say is the monthly single issues that come out. So like the Squirrel Girl that you reviewed last week is a floppy. It's a single
issue. And the Spider-Verse
comic
that Nicole reviewed was a floppy.
Yes.
Because it's
a paper pamphlet.
And that can just be considered like a single issue copy.
Okay, and they are released monthly, and they are
generally
part of a larger story.
Yeah, yes. With like four or five of those issues compiling a story arc.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And generally, most average comics are about 22 pages of story, give or take. They can be a little bit bigger if it's an annual, which is a special released once a year. And if it's a mainstream comic, it's probably going to have a bunch of ads in there.
Yes.
So I've noticed that.
Yes. You know, some Twix ads or something like that. So, yeah. Then we have, what was next? Trade paperback?
Trade paperback.
So trade paperback is generally the term for a collection of single-issue comics.
Yep.
And it takes away all the ads, and sometimes they'll put in extra relevant material, like maybe they'll put the first appearance of Squirrel Girl in the first Squirrel Girl trade, just so that you have it there.
Or sketches, or a sample script, or something like that.
Editor notes.
Just, do you know where the term trade paperback came from?
I don't offhand. No.
Okay, neither do I.
We should look that up.
Yeah, so basically if you wanted to have a whole story arc, you know, and not buy the single issue floppies, you'd get the trade paperback.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so graphic novel.
Graphic novels generally reserved for a book that is released only in that big fat format.
An OGN.
Yep, an original graphic novel.
So
that
never was in floppy.
Yep. It's not a reprinting of anything.
Right.
It's written to be a standalone or contained story.
Yep.
But if you listen to Marjan Satrapi, the woman who created Persepolis, she went off on a rant one time when I was interviewing her, talking about that the term graphic novel is just it was just coined by the bourgeois because it's a comic book. They're all comic books. We read comic books. I write comic books. And the rant went on for about 20 minutes, and I was left unconvinced.
I get it, but when you work in retail, you really want to have a distinction.
Sure.
Because that tells me, are you looking for a format? Are you looking for a story?
I
are
concur.
You looking, you know, like it.
I just had the name drop there because I was feeling a little bit insane.
And you said that name very well, I might add.
You did a great job on that.
See, that's something that I always thought a graphic novel was, just semantics to get away from the term comic book.
And some people use trade paperback and graphic novel interchangeably?
Precisely, yes. Because the bourgeois are afraid of the term comic book.
Yes,
it's lowbrow.
The semantic part, like it could be very obnoxious because sometimes you'll get somebody that wants to correct you all the time, and that sucks. But really, from a retailer point of view, you need to tell us what you want, because otherwise, I'll order you the wrong thing, and I still want you to pay me for it. But I always think Mr. Science Theater always had this one part of a skit in one of their shows where every time they saw the mansion, somebody would say, like, "Stately Wayne Manor," and somebody would be like, "Oh, is that like in the comic books?" And the others would correct them, be like, "It's not a comic; it's a graphic novel."
Well,
and
it's like, just like, it's not a doll, it's an action figure.
Sure.
I mean, these distinctions are really crucial, you guys.
Yeah.
It's a doll.
For my ego. Yeah. But yeah, that's basically it, just as far as knowing, you know, it makes a big deal for us in the order forms.
Yeah.
Because it's just sort of like, oh man, how many of this do I order? Oh wait, that's just a reprint. Okay, I can figure that out.
Exactly.
If it's an original graphic novel, then I have to take that into account.
And those are usually denoted in the description of the item.
Yeah.
The graphic novel will know, like, oh, that's that self-contained story generally.
So it really is a technicality, because that's in my invoice.
Yeah.
It tells me what I got.
Cool. All right, so that's explained to Ben. It's not the last time they're going to explain things to me like I'm a five-year-old. We look for that further on in the show.
We didn't talk down to you like a five-year-old. I think we talked to you like a grown-up. We treated you like an equal.
I think a five-year-old would have like started playing with the comics or something while we were talking.
Well, a five-year-old would have been correcting us.
Moving on. One of the reasons why we explained to Ben is because I didn't grow up reading comic books. I grew up collecting baseball cards, and it appealed greatly to my completist nature, because I can collect every single card of a set and arrange it in order.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across this article from adventuresinpoortaste.com. Never heard of it before, but there you go. Called The Completist Dilemma, where the author of this article basically talks about how he's unable and basically frustrated at how he cannot complete his collection of things. And his collection may mean just watching the latest bad Michael Bay Transformers movie. Which he feels very badly about. But it kind of appealed to me, because I'm undergoing the same kind of thing, because I'm currently like trying to complete some old baseball card sets of mine from the junk wax era. Fortunately, the cards are really cheap to come by, but it's hard to find them because nobody carries them. So my question to you guys was, is it really possible to collect every single issue of a comic of a run of, like, because I hear talk about 7 different Batmans in a month. I mean, can you collect all those without spending a fortune?
I think there are some hardcore people and they can achieve that. It gets more difficult with certain characters than others. You're going to have a harder time with Batman than you are going to say the Martian Manhunter. You could find most of the Martian Manhunters after a while, you know, and they're not going to cost you an arm and a leg like getting the first appearance of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know some people definitely have cutoffs too. One of our coworkers, John, he collects X-Men, but there's a certain point where it's just like, wait a second, I don't care about the modern X-Men. It doesn't count in my mind. So you have to kind of force these little divisions sometimes for your own sanity.
There's a certain degree of satisfaction that you're controlling some corner of reality when you have amassed all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to this fella's article about the Transformers, I mean, he'd set himself up for a particular challenge, because the Transformers have been around for so many generations and have so many permutations between the Bay movies and the comic books and the toys.
And the Japanese cartoons.
All the different
Japanese, because he was doing Japanese stuff, too.
Yeah. I wonder if he considers GoBots part of the Transformers world.
They technically were.
Macross.
And they are now.
And so, all, you know, so I mean, he's got a lot of work cut out for him, so it's no wonder that he's, you know, cracking, around the edges.
Yep.
But one of the things that occurred to me while I was reading this piece, and something I've encountered with other completists, is where is the joy for you?
Right.
You know, where's the joy in the experience? Why do it?
Do you enjoy the hunt?
Yeah.
Because a lot of comic collectors, it is about the hunt.
Is it the satisfaction of having them?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm, you know, I'll be frank with you. I do not lead a life of satisfaction, but I sure have a boatload of crap in my apartment.
Yeah, but I think part of the satisfaction stems from the aesthetic value. It's nice to be able to look on your shelves and see a complete set of something, mm-hmm. be it a run of comics or a run of action figures. Someone like you, however, I've seen your apartment, and you have a whole room in your apartment dedicated to boxes, and so only you know if you have a complete run of something.
Actually, I'm getting to the point where I've forgotten. And that's why it's time. And that's why I think it's time to start cleaning house, because I've forgotten what's in a lot of those boxes.
I'm telling
you, Chris will show me things that he's just bought from that he's just bought off a collector, and he'll show me the prices on things. I'm like, oh my goodness, I have that, and oh, that's going for $125, and
turn it around and buy some more stuff if you want.
Yeah. So I mean,
then
I think...
there's I'm sorry, Nicole, but there's part of the completist dilemma right there as well. Yeah. You know.
Well, like you had also said, I'm going to put my thing on the back burner, but you had also said, like, you know, oh, I'd want my Walking Dead number 1 and 2 back, you know, like, you know, and that collector part of you, I know, like, you might purge stuff, but then you'll be like, but maybe I want them back again, you know, because it's, and it depends. Sometimes you're like, fine, go away.
Here's a little bit of,
you bought me a cool thing.
We're going to come complete here. Chris, when I told Chris I had a first print of Walking Dead number 1, and we looked at the value, he said, buddy, you can buy as many hardbound editions of the first story arc as you want with that kind of money. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
There's still a little hole in my heart.
I know.
Yeah, and there's some things that are like that. Yeah. I mean, like, so when you said the collector thing, what I thought of is my desire to either have, like, all Galactus things, which I've not taken on, or, like, something more recent, like Kamala Khan of Ms. Marvel, because she's shown up in Amazing Spider-Man, she's shown up in S.H.I.E.L.D., she's going to show up on a new team. So there's lots of little places that she's showing up in the Marvel Universe. So if I'm going to be the collector that I... sometimes want to be, you know, I have to pay sharp attention to what's coming out. Is she in that? Is she there? You know, and it takes a lot of research and energy. And like Chris said, you know, do you enjoy the hunt? I hate the hunt. Yeah. I like it handed to me. I'm like a little lazy pig in like the mud where I'm just like, y'all come back when you want to hang because I'll be here in the mud. Like I'm not going anywhere. So I had to cut my losses and be like, do I want to collect all of Kamala Khan or do I just want to read Ms. Marvel and enjoy my life?
See, I have a particular problem, and I'm told the first step is acknowledging you have a problem. But my particular problem is that I like statues. And Bowen Collectibles did a lot of Marvel comic busts and statues. And my problem is, like, at first somebody gifted me one. They gifted me a villain. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to do villains. And then you get one villain, and then you realize, well, wait, that guy is a member of a team. I'm going to have to get everybody in that team. And then you're like, oh, but now I have a certain section of a group of characters that are acknowledged as part of the Fantastic Four. I better get the rest of the Fantastic Four. Oh, they just made the Inhumans. I better get them because they're part of the Fantastic Four. You know, and so sooner or later, you look at your shelf and you realize you have a bust of the Tarantula from Spider-Man, whose sole superpower was he had pointy shoes. And you're just kind of like, this is where my life is now. And also, I can feel this guy about the Transformers because they are a particular weak spot of mine. And I am now in the black hole of their Combiner War toys, which is that old marketing scheme that I love that they created, which is 5 different robots combined to form one larger robot. Right. And so they keep releasing them. And like, well, I got that guy, but he's not. Oh, you did Devastator. I better get him. He was the first guy. Oh, he did that other guy. So it's downhill for me.
You're perfectly describing several threads of my poor impulse control when it would be an action figure line or a comic book series. It's like, I'll just, first taste free.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just get this figure and I'll just get the X-Men. And but I got to get the bad guys. I got to get all the other mutants. Oh, and these guys overlap with the Avengers. You just perfectly described the arc of my life for the last.
Well, I mean, if you just want to get rid of like all of your money, you should just collect Monster High dolls because they are breeding like bunnies.
Yeah.
I have like 45 or 50 dolls, and that's a drop in the bucket of what they've actually made. I've run out of space
have you
for
really?
Them.
You've had a little help, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Between you and my husband, like my birthday was just 5 packs of Monster High dolls, and it was like, this is amazing. And then I was like, oh.
What are Monster High dolls?
They are the daughters of monsters. So they used to be Universal monsters, like the Mummy, or Frankenstein, Creature from the Black Lagoon. But now it's like, they're making weird things now. I don't know, like the genie out of the lamp, and like the boogie monster's daughter, and the daughter of a ghost. I don't know.
I met years ago. I used to frequent this action figure collectible store. It was one of the first on the planet at the time, and probably still, if it still existed, probably would still be. But the guy that ran that store really impressed me because he had his compulsion under a unique form of control. He just kept leveling up. So he would collect one series of something or other and then consolidate that by selling it and then leveling up something else. So he had the entire original 78 Star Wars figures from Kenner, all of them mint in package, worth, you know, thousands of dollars. He sold all of those to buy a single mint in package Mego Star Trek Romulan.
Wow.
Okay? So he just kept leveling up like that. So then he got the entire Mego Star Trek line, which was like only 20 figures, but they were worth mint. Mm-hmm. And then he leveled up to the next level and started collecting genuine movie props.
Oh, yeah.
So he had like...
Wow, I like that this is like a leveling up.
Yeah, it was a pyramid, you know? And I was just really impressed with this guy, that he had a strategy to how he did this. So he experienced the joys and the terrors and the pleasures of the hunt and collecting. But instead of expanding into a lot of useless ballast, which is welcome to my life, you know,
it's a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what I do with books.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I level up my singles to trade, then I level up my trades to hardcovers, then I level up my hardcovers to a super duper exclusive absolute edition omnibus perfect down.
And then I just hire the author to come to my house and read it.
Yes. Yeah. Sign it and read it for you. That would be then you would be complete.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like made with gold ink and whatever. Yeah.
Cool. So we are all in our own way a completist, and it empowers us and it defeats us.
Well, I mean, the other thing that Cole had mentioned before we recorded was the potentiality of going into hoarder status.
Right.
So I did want to make mention of that.
Is this an unhealthy compulsion when it comes down to it? Or is a border on this?
I think if you're not finding dead cats in your collection, you're doing okay.
I think so, yeah. Because, I mean, the problem is like the awesome problem that I have is that my husband is also a geek and a collector.
And awesome.
That's what I'm saying is like, yeah, it's awesome. He's awesome. It's awesome. But at the same time, we have limited space. And so I always think like, okay, do I need this comic? Like, mm-hmm. I want to collect all the things, but it's both of us contributing to the house, you know, and our house looks really great. Looks really nice. But at the same time, it might not always look that way if we keep going.
Right.
I will say a break point is when you find yourself moving and you go to the hospital after that.
Oh, there you go.
Twice.
There you go.
Twice.
Story of Chris Casso. How old were you?
I don't know. I was probably 18-ish. All right. You know, something like that.
A spry young man who sent himself to the
long tragic story short.
Hundreds. Of pounds.
Oh, we did actually tell the story.
Did we tell the story before?
Okay, yeah. So basically, I just moved too much. I went to the hospital. Rheumatoid arthritis. How you doing? It's great. Moving on.
Oh, you know.
So I think the lesson learned there, you don't have to whittle down your collection. You just got to have some friends or hire a moving company.
Yes.
Better yet. Just say no.
I spent all the money on the collection.
Sell part of your collection and level up to a moving company. Yeah. All right. Moving on. Today we're going to have rapid-fire questions. Some of these questions I'm just going to say to one individual person, and you have to give me the first answer that comes out of your brain. Now, I was reading through some of these. I just went through and collected these off the comic book subreddit on reddit.com. And reading through some of these, I might be repeating myself. I don't know. So I think
Are we getting to that point with this podcast?
I think it's okay.
This has come up several times. So have we talked about this before?
If I repeat questions, it's okay. If I repeat a question to you, that's not okay. So if I give you a question and you're like, I answered that before, then let me know. I'll just give it to somebody else.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chris Casso, would comics be more popular if they were cheaper?
Yes. Oh, you want me to?
Yes. No, right off the bat. They would be more if they.
They would. Because people could actually afford them.
Yeah. Yep.
And
kids
then buy
would pick
them.
Up more. Yep.
And buy more.
They would read more.
So, yeah.
More. And we're looking at now, what? $5.99 a cover?
Getting close. $4.99, $3.99.
For a floppy?
Yeah. For a floppy.
All right. Okay, Nicole Lamb, what individual comic did you breeze through the fastest?
Not that one. Bee and Puppy Cat.
Bee and Puppy Cat.
Mm-hmm. There's like little to no anything in that.
Just page through it in no time at all.
Yeah, really fast.
All righty. Cole Hornaday, what comic do you not want to see in film? Regardless of whether or not they're making one.
Do I not want to see in film?
A comic you liked, you're like, they better not make a movie out of this.
Crossed.
Yeah.
Despise that comic book.
All right, all right. Some people might have gone towards a comic that they really like and they don't want to see a film ruin it. You just went to a comic that you hate. I just don't want that
to soil public consciousness any more than necessary.
Okay.
All right. Nicole, I've never read comics before. Where should I start to get into it?
Okay, well, then that starts with, what do you like to?
That's not rapid fire
at
all.
That's like, I usually do about 5 questions.
All right, what are your 5 questions?
Oh, no, I don't know if they're actually
5 questions.
Yeah,
it's like the Death Star just had to power up to shoot that one.
So I say, okay, do you like sci-fi, fantasy, humor? Like, what kind of things, what kind of genres do you like?
Okay.
And then you say, I like humor. And then I say, okay, do you like...
Squirrel Girl.
Squirrel Girl, I don't know. Does this art appeal to you? Okay, now, how about Chew? Do you like that? Okay, no, how about, you know, and then I would just kind of play some stuff out.
All right,
it's
cool.
So you
have a process, and that's good to know.
Yeah.
All right. Cole Hornaday, what was your first comic?
It was Mike Grell's The Warlord, number 3.
And you know the issue number, excellent.
Yeah, still have it.
Cool. All right, last one, Chris Casso. Is there an app or a website someone can use to keep track of their collection?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. The one that I'm familiar with is called like Comic Collectors, but it ends with a Z instead of an S. I think that one's pretty good because you put it up on, you're on the website, but you could connect it to your phone. There even has like for each individual issue, you could even mark down, have I read this? Yes or no?
Cool.
I think, yeah, there's probably tons of others, but since I don't do that kind of stuff, I'm not the person to ask.
I was interested in that question because I have thousands and thousands of baseball cards, and I have actually begun keeping spreadsheets of the quantity and the estimated worth of all of them. I'm trying to convince Cole Hornaday to do the same thing for his collection. But I found a couple other ones. LeagueOfComicGeeks.com and StashMyComics.com are also a couple of the choices.
I think just like a comicbookpriceguide.com or something that can do pretty good too.
Yeah. There was a time Delicious.com or Delish.us or whatever. It was this app that you can actually take a picture of the barcode and it'll catalog it for you.
Those are really nice. My husband uses mycomicrealm.com or something like that.
Cool.
It's an online database.
All right, so that's rapid fire. On to our next segment. It's Book Report. Get your Book Report hats on, everybody. All right, Cole Hornaday, what did you read this week?
Well, I've got a stack. And this because I had a really
pick
fun...
one, but choose wisely.
Well, I think I may have mentioned this a couple weeks ago. You know, they reprinted Doug Minch and Doug Minch's Weird World, the original series that goes all the way back to, it was a sword and sorcery storyline that was originally featured in Marvel Super Action number 1. And it was drawn by Mike Ploog, who was like the consummate fantasy illustrator back then. And these are really just Tolkien pastiche kind of things, and they really don't hold much of a candle if you've actually read Tolkien to those stories, but they're charming. And this book, my father read these with me, some of these comics when I was a kid, and he would call them the pixie books. Yeah, yeah. And they would kind of, in his, I'm sure in his mind, they kind of overlapped with the Penny's ElfQuest books as well. But Ploog does not draw the whole thing. This book collects stories that go from the early 70s all the way to the 80s. And Weird World was featured in different anthology collections from Marvel Premiere to... it had its own series for Marvel Super Special called Warriors of the Shadow Realm and then was printed in Marvel Fanfare. And they're all over the place, and there are stories that are has still been left unprinted. But the best parts are the early stories drawn by Ploog. And Mike Ploog drew the first two. Mike Ploog also, if you've ever had the pleasure of seeing Ralph Bakshi's Wizards, the best part about the film is not the shoddy, dated animation. It are these still images drawn by Mike Ploog And there's this wonderful narration by an actress whose name escapes me right now, and she was in The Forbidden Zone. She was in Rick Elfman's Forbidden Zone and stuff like that. Anyway, those are the most powerful sequences in the film. And Ploug's illustrative style was inspired by Von Baudet, who was an underground artist in the Bay Area, who I think killed himself sucking on nitrous oxide.
Autoerotic asphyxiation.
Oh, it was that. It was okay.
Yeah. Okay. Moving along.
Right. But there's this. But I was in reading the Weird World reprint collection. I rediscovered this whole period of not underground, kind of mid-ground fantasy artwork from that time period that I'd forgotten how much I enjoyed. So I went back and rewatched Wizards. I've been rereading my Von Baudet Cheech Wizard reprints, and it's great fun. And I think it's lost to a lot of younger readers, and I would recommend checking it out. Are the stories groundbreaking? No. Is the artwork? Yeah. In a lot of ways, it's really fun.
Cool. All right. And I just want to point out that on the Wizards DVD, you didn't actually take off the sticker on the top of the DVD, and that I'm pretty fussy when it comes to things like that. I have to remove all those stickers.
I just picked this up at Half Price Books down the street here, and it was like this when I got it.
Well, you should have take the sticker off. Take it off now.
Take it off. All right.
Oh, yeah,
Lawrence.
That's
all
some
right.
good stuff right there. All right. Chris Casso, what
I
did you read?
I'd love to satisfy you, baby.
I'm in the process of reading The Six Voyages of Lone Sloane. It's by Philippe Droulet, if I'm mispronouncing that correctly.
And that's a really large format book.
I think it's Droulet.
I will accept that. It's a nice oversized hardcover. There's going to be, I believe, a total of 6 volumes. This is older material from, I think, the 70s. It's been out of print in the States for a while, probably at least the 80s, and I can't recall if it was translated or not beforehand. This is my first major exposure to it. It's beautiful artwork. It's very psychedelic. I kind of would say it's sort of like Jim Steranko, European Steranko artwork. And if you're not familiar with Steranko, go read Nick Fury, old Nick Fury's. It's just beautiful, weird, strange sci-fi stuff following this explorer who gets like godlike powers and flies through the cosmos on a chair and just meets different aliens and species. And it's a little Lovecraftian in some aspects. So it's a mixture of sci-fi and horror. If you're a fan of stuff like Alejandro Jodorowsky, stuff like the Meta Barons, or stuff like Dune, you know, this is definitely up your alley. A lot of it, the artwork's just fantastic, and the story's very interesting.
So, thumbing through it, it looks a little bit Kirby-like, too, because it's
There's
explosive,
definitely,
the stuff he did later in his life.
This guy's definitely flying on a Mobius chair, like in the Forever People and New Gods.
Yeah.
And it even has some like Tolkien-esque elements to it. It's the perfect merging of a lot of different art styles and genres.
But it looks really text-heavy, too.
Yeah, it's actually not light in the text. It makes you work for it, but then it gives you giant splash pages as well of just these super awesome machinery and
I think
and
I want chips.
It's great.
Cool. All right, Nicole.
Here, Ben.
Oh my goodness.
How's that?
Oh, that's the stuff.
That's it right
just
there.
Peeled
all right, we're
going
to have to end this quickly, Nicole.
Oh, no, not quickly. Okay, no. So I've been reading more Secret War stuff. I'm reading Inferno. I read 1 through 3. And the basic premise is that Limbo, which I'm not really familiar with what Limbo...
It's hell.
It's just hell. Okay. So it's broken loose in Manhattan, and so there's just nothing but demons. And the X-Men have been able to, like, contain it, so nothing in, nothing out. And in the meantime, Colossus's sister, Illyana, or Magic, has been taken prisoner. And Colossus and Scott Summers, Cyclops, have struck up a deal that, like, Colossus, like, every other day of the year will be, like, helping to defend. But for one day of that year, he wants to go in and try to save his sister. And it's really interesting. Like, I feel like there's been stories about Illyana and magic and Colossus and all this kind of stuff, but I've never read any of them.
Now, for context, this is part of Secret Wars.
It's part of Secret Wars.
So
yeah. It's
another domain where in this version of Manhattan, there's a lot of Manhattans in Battleworld.
Exactly.
And this one is controlled by demons.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. So the story itself about him trying to get his sister and his dedication to it is one thing. The one other thing that I really like about the story is that it shows how much Cyclops is like a really good leader and nobody listens to him.
Yeah. I would like to commit a future episode to how the world poops on Cyclops.
So
I'm writing that down.
Yes.
So I don't want to give away like the whole story, but I do want to touch on the Scott stuff. For one, I just want to say like I do recommend the Inferno title. I love the artwork. I've been loving the story. Been really excited for it. And now I want to talk about Scott, if that's cool. During the book report.
Feel free.
So after 4 years of trying, Cyclops has actually been crippled. And he's like, okay, we're not trying anymore. That's it. We're done. We tried. And then Colossus is like, but you promised. And other X-Men walk up and they're like, yeah, Scott, you promised. And then they turn to Colossus and they're like, well, I mean, we'll do it one more time. But yeah, we probably should not do it anymore. Even though they're just like, yeah, you promised, Scott. And it's just sort of like, well, just listen to him. Like, he has a reason for it. He's trying to, like, protect everybody. Like, there's, you know, some stuff happening. And then there's another point later in the series where the wall gets compromised and people are starting to run out. And Brother Voodoo is like, Cyclops, the reinforcements are here. And he's like, what? No, what are you doing? You guys need to be like at your post. And they're like, it's totally fine. We got this. We're coming to help you. And then all of a sudden, like, stuff starts like really going to pieces. And then Scott's just like, guys, why? Like, I just was like, this two points where Scott is a good leader for a reason. Like, he's trying to protect what is left. He's trying to keep stuff. And, like, he might not always be the fun party guy or anything like that, but it doesn't matter. Like, he's trying to be a leader and he's trying to protect things. And everything has gone wrong because no one has listened to Scott.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what this comic is about in another underlying way. So anyway, I totally recommend it. And like I said, I don't know any backstory of any of the stuff that's happened with Illyana or magic, and I don't feel like you need to. You can just jump right in. As long as you know what Chris had said, the context of Secret Wars that we're dealing with Battleworld and...
Just Wikipedia.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, of course, we play quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. Today, I've outsourced these questions to Mr. Cole Hornaday. So, Cole, get off your dang phone.
I was looking up trivia again.
All right. Hornaday, what are these questions about?
This trivia questions for me this week. We're going to call this one Films Few Knew Were Adapted from Comics.
All right.
So what I'm going to do is I will read you the premise drawn from either IMDb or Netflix. I will drop the lead actor's names and the director if I see fit. Starring Viggo Mortensen.
And we have to say what the movie is.
And you have to guess the graphic novel it is based on.
Oh, okay.
Right, usually they are one and the same. The titles are actually, in all cases, actually, they are all one and the same. This isn't always the case.
All right, so question number one.
Starring Viggo Mortensen, a mild-mannered man becomes a local hero through an act of violence, which sets off repercussions that will shake his family to its very core. Directed by David Cronenberg, starring Maria Bello and Ed Harris.
I've seen this, but I can't remember the title of it.
I know the book.
I thought it was a history of violence.
It's the history of violence.
Hey, but I didn't know that there was a comic.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's the whole premise of
the
Max Collins.
Originally published in 2005, written by Alan Grant, drawn by Vince Locke.
Oh, okay.
Excellent.
No, not
the next one, starring Steve Buscemi. With only the plan of moving in together after high school, two unusually devious friends seek direction in life. As a mere gag, they respond to a man's newspaper ad for a date, only to find it will greatly complicate their lives. starring directed by Terry Zwigoff, also starring Thora Birch and Scarlett Johansson, and Nicole knows the answer.
Ghost World.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. Originally published in 2001, adapted from the graphic novel by Dan Close.
Excellent.
Next, starring Bruce Willis. You guys are going to get this one, I know. Bruce Willis, Ellen Mirren, and Morgan Freeman when his peaceful life is threatened by a high-tech assassin. Former Black Ops agent Frank Moses reassembles his team in a last-ditch effort to survive and uncover his assailants.
Red.
Absolutely. By it's Warren Red Ellis. From 2010. Originally written by Warren Ellis and drawn by Cully Hamner.
Cool.
It's a very different story.
It is a very different story. Number four. Bonds of... This one's directed by Sam Mendes, starring Tom Hanks. Bonds of loyalty are put to the test when a hitman's son witnesses what his father does for a living.
Oh, that's... Oh, man, I'm sorry. I'm talking, but I don't know the answer.
You got it. It's right on the tip of your...
It's like set in the 40s or something.
Chris Casso is cheating. He's looking around at the book spines.
No.
Yeah, it's set in the...
It's a road? Is the word road in there?
Road to Perdition.
Road to Perdition. Yeah. 2002, adapted from the graphic novel written by Max Allen Collins and drawn by Richard Piers Rayner. It was originally published in 98, but it went through a lot of different publishers and a lot of different pressings. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, last one. In Victorian era London, a troubled clairvoyant police officer detective investigates the murders of Jack the Ripper. This one is starring Johnny Depp, Heather Graham, and Robbie Coltrane. Yes.
Well, you got it first.
No.
Is it from Hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
Yep. Film from 2001, originally written by Alan Moore and drawn by Eddie Campbell. The 11-part graphic novel series was published between 1991 and 1998.
I actually forgot Johnny Depp was in that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think it's a terrible film, but it's surely not a very good adaptation.
Tough
that
to condense that book, though.
Actually, yeah. I know that it's not considered a very good film. I actually have it on DVD. I enjoyed it, and I have issue number one at home. I have not read it. So,
what was our score? I wasn't keeping score.
Scoring is bourgeois.
Okay. There we go.
Anyway, I've got a lightning round question. If we want a lightning round, question.
Do it. Let's do it.
All right.
Actually, you know what? Hang on, because we're gonna end the show, but we're gonna save the lightning round question for our bonus Wednesday episode that we promised at the beginning
of this week.
Okay.
So that's our show. Thank you for tuning in. You can find us at perfectbombpodcast@gmail.com. You can email us anything you want. Really, anything you want. perfectbombpodcast@gmail.com. I think I said the email address for the website. Whatever. It's getting late. Tune in Wednesday for the bonus episode. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in a couple days.